It's the True Faith Podcast. Newcastle United 3, Cardiff City 0. I'm Alex Hurst, joined today by a bumper podcast of Norman Riley, Chris Shipman and Rob Clothier. Lads, it's a pleasure to speak to you after Newcastle United have finally come out of the relegation zone, as well as putting a truly terrible Cardiff City side to the sword. 3-0 on a decent day at St James's Park for a change. Some notices before we get stuck into this one for you. This podcast is sponsored by our patrons, who pay around £5 a month for these days 7 to 8 extra podcasts per week on all things Newcastle United and Premier League. So get involved, check it out if you haven't already. We would really appreciate the support, and it keeps this podcast free. We are supported by FansBet, the unique gaming company who present 50% of their net profits back to good fan causes. Check them out if you do like to gamble. Because it's, you know, as a gambler myself, I'd rather my money went back into the football community if I did and do lose money on gambling. And finally, this week at True Faith, we'll have about 5 extra free podcasts for you. We've won a game. There's no league game next weekend, so we're going to put them out. We'll have a chat with Newcastle United goalkeeping coach Simon Smith. That is courtesy of Ketch and the Match of the Day magazine. We'll have an NUFC mastermind recorded in the summer between the True Faith lads, and we also have the most in-depth interview over about 5 hours with Super Mac that you've ever heard. So we'll put those out piece by piece this week. So keep it with True Faith. Anyone who follows us on Twitter at TFNUFC, you know, please help us out by retweeting the podcast, leaving us a 5-star review on iTunes or whatever podcast provider you use. And I'll stop talking and get straight into this, Norman. Once again, Newcastle United produced when it really, really mattered under Rafa Benitez. Considering the team he had available to him, the shambles that's going on above him, and the size of this match, Norman, was this Rafa's best winner's boss, in your opinion?
I can answer that quite easily. No. I think the Man United performance last season at home, that was, in my opinion, the best performance produced under an extremely testing set of circumstances. That was huge, given that we'd gone in the bottom three, having seen Huddersfield wallop Bournemouth earlier on in the day. And obviously Man United are a completely different class of side to Cardiff. Now, you know, we were a better side last season, but the gap between us and Manchester United last season was way, way, way bigger than the gap between us and Cardiff yesterday. It was a huge win. We were under a lot of pressure. We had to win. I mean, we all, you know, we all agreed that, I mean, it was a cliched 6-pointer. We didn't come out yesterday with the 3 points. Cardiff are still above us. We've got Spurs, City, Wolves away. 3 games that we could feasibly come out of with 0 points, and that wouldn't be a shock. So not winning yesterday would have, I mean, it really, really would have had a negative impact on us for the rest of the season, I think. So to produce a very convincing 3-0 victory. I mean, it was a 3-0 walloping. Like, 3-0 isn't a huge deficit. You know, it's not like 5 or 6. It's not an absolute cakewalk. But I felt on yesterday's performance, if we come away from that winning 5-0, it would have been thoroughly merited. They were useless. They were terrible. We commented on numerous occasions on how they were just rigidly stuck to that 4-4-2. It's Neil Warnock. It's a manager who probably on the training ground gets the cones out, plays a bit of five-a-side, and just plays 4-4-2 without any analysis of the opposition whatsoever. However, that doesn't detract from the fact that we put a side out yesterday that, on seeing it, we were all a bit, why is he playing 5 at the back? As it turned out, it was an absolute tactical masterstroke. We got in behind them so many times. Richie was incredibly effective. Yedlin got in behind so many times. There's a question, if Yedlin had a bit more self-belief, he probably could have done a lot more damage. But still, every single player on that pitch performed, I think, I would say probably to the peak of their abilities. Now, you can take up people like Lejeune perhaps from that, because Lejeune is capable of stepping up and even more. But those players yesterday, there's not one player you can fault. It was fantastic. And yes, the pressure was on, but I think even the crowd, those nerves didn't come from the crowd yesterday. I was expecting it to be a very nervy kind of affair, but I think from the get-go, everyone just seemed to be up for it. I even think Ashley being there yesterday kind of gave the crowd a bit more of an edge, and the noise, I don't know, obviously we're in Block V, so you don't really know what's going on around the rest of the stadium, but yesterday you could see people get out of their seats, people were singing, it was quite obvious, and I thought everything just worked perfectly. Best performance under Rafa? No, as I say, that for me was the Man United game, given the context. But yesterday, you know, it ran it close, because again, it was huge, and just thank Rafa that we won.
Brilliant, and I can't agree with you more. I mean, interesting little anecdote I believe you have for the listeners about Matthew Ritchie, Norman.
I came out of the Centurion yesterday. I had a pint with Si and Mark, and I was getting on the train, and I saw three blokes stood together in tracksuits, two in Cardiff tracksuits, one in the Newcastle tracksuit with the baseball cap. The full trackies, the full lot, like. And they were all shorter than me, which was nice. It always makes me feel like, you know, really good when men are shorter than me. I noticed it was Matt Ritchie, and it's like, and of course, I just went over and I said, sorry to interrupt, gents. I just wanted to see you absolutely superb today. Thank you. And he shook my hand and just said, top man, thanks very much. And it was lovely, you know. There was like no, put it this way, I met Craig Bellamy when he was at Newcastle, and he could not have been a bigger arsehole. Matt Ritchie yesterday was absolutely, like, for a very brief exchange, he just knew that he wasn't flustered or annoyed that a fan had come up to him. He was genuinely like, yeah, mate, thank you. Top man, thank you. He couldn't, his body language was great, and it was just a lovely end to the day. And then I also, you mentioned Patrons before. Gary Patron bumped into me on the train, and from being sober when I got on the train, I was fairly well to be. So big shout out to Gary. Thanks for that, mate. You nearly killed us today.
Will you ever wash that hand again? Matt Ritchie's hand.
I'll have to, because I picked up three massive pails of dog shite this morning.
Fair enough. I'll bring in Rob. Fabian Scher, how good was that goal in context of, you know, the fact that we never score, on context of all the great goals you've seen in St James's Park, the fact he was a centre back, you know. I mean, you know, just can you talk me through how good you think it is for a centre back to run that far with the ball and produce that finish?
Yeah, it was. It's the kind of goal that we crave at St James's Park, isn't it? A bit of flair, and to have come from a centre back, like you say, it's just, you know, there's been a lot of comparisons made with Albert's goals, and I think there's some stats saying Albert was the last centre back that scored two goals for us in a game. Since Scher yesterday, so in the Premier League, the goal itself, I mean, he picked the ball up like pretty much on the touchline, about 50 yards out, didn't he? And then in his post-match interview, he sort of said, obviously asked him about it, and he said, well, I just went forwards and I seen the gap there, so I thought, why not just keep going and make some progress towards the box. And I think you've got to, not to detract too much from the goal, but I mean, Cardiff just stepped back from him, they stood off him, and fair play to the lad. He thought, well, screw it, I'm just going to go for it, and he's worked his way into the box, and the finish was brilliant, actually, with his he's just sort of curled it and placed it into the bottom corner. It was very, very good composure, considering how far he'd already progressed with the ball. I thought it was a fantastic finish, and like I say, it's the kind of goal that we want to see Newcastle United scoring, not just fluky tap-ins, or, I mean, we'll take them at the minute, but, you know, we'll take anything at the minute. But yeah, it's nice to have seen a bit of creativity, a bit like a nice solo effort, and it was really refreshing to see.
And you know, his overall performance, do you still think he gets a game when Fernandes is fit? Because that back three looked really good yesterday. I mean, Cardiff, as you know, Norman's alluded to, offered absolutely nothing as an attacking threat, you know, beyond the last 5 minutes when they threw caution to the wind and then we scored. you know, easy for me to say, but ignoring the goals, how do you rate his overall play and his chances of staying in that side as one of the three best centre-backs at the club, ahead of Kieran Clarke, who was also a goal threat, and Fernandes, who was ill yesterday?
First of all, clearly centre-back is our strongest department. We've got five good quality centre-backs who are all vying with each other for those centre back positions, and I think obviously Lejeune and Scher are ball playing sort of defenders. They're the ones who are going to be relied on to get the ball up the pitch and retain possession. The way I see it, I would probably put Clark furthest down the list as centre back, but I think out of everyone, Lascelles is the one who's going to be feeling the most under pressure with the players around him, like Scher and Fernandes and Lejeune, especially now that Lejeune's back. He's probably going to, obviously being the club captain, does that mean he sort of starts ahead of the others? I don't know, like, Rafa's not been afraid to drop him in the past. And I think it's it's a very, very good thing that we've got this competition at centre back. It's something we've always relied on under Rafa, is having, you know, being tight at the back, keeping clean sheets whenever possible, keeping the conceded goals to a minimum. So having all those quality centre backs is probably our biggest strength at the minute, and probably a reason why we're playing 5-3-2 or whatever you want to call it, 3-5-2. Rafa's playing to his strengths. Just picked up on a... I was just having a look at Cher's stats, actually. So we in the Premier League this season with Cher, well, first without Cher, he's played 12 games. We've played 12 games without him, and we've only made 3 points without him. And he's played 11 times in the Premier League for us this season, and we've won 18 points with him. So, I mean, that's is an incredible stat, I thought, to be honest. Like, and surely that is a reflection of what he brings to us as a team.
He's almost this season's Lascelles, because the stats were very similar last season for Lascelles in terms of points with and without. Norman, were you raising your hand there, or was that just kind of hand?
Definitely me. Yeah, it's hand movement, but it's also me raising my hand. It's me RSI, mate. But what I'd like to say about Lascelles yesterday was, and we were talking about this during the match, is that you've got these two very good ball-playing centre-halves either side of you. Lascelles' job yesterday was basically head the ball, win tackles, clear the ball. That was it. And that's what he is. That's what he is as a footballer. I would say he's an organiser, but I actually think Dubravka's usurped him in that role of organising the back sort of five or six. I think Lascelles' role's decreased in that sense. But yesterday it was basically... I'm gonna say the word basic again. It was down to basic, complete basics for him. He didn't need to do anything other than just keep winning the ball in the air and keep clearing the ball. And we saw a very good performance from yesterday. His strengths were utilised perfectly. And what I keep sharing Lejeune on the same side. It just depends on the opposition. But what I will say is, if anyone knows the actor Dave Franco, Cher is the double of Dave Franco. And I just want to put that on record, if that's all right.
Consider it done. It is now on the record. I was going to come to you anyway about that Lascelles point. But really quickly on Cher, I saw a great tweet this morning that this isn't... I can't remember who posted the tweet, typical me. I should have written it down, but the guy who posted the tweet wasn't legitimising Charlie and Ashley's running of the club. However, there are, because of Rafa's talent network of scouts and his footballing mind, to get Dubravka and Cher, who've played such a big role in our Premier League campaign so far, for near enough, like, you know, £7-8 million, shows there is value, particularly outside of English players and British players. And if they could just trust Rafa to bring those players in, and also bring in players with a little bit more quality, then the Newcastle United would be flying. So there is value out there, and I'm sure everyone listening doesn't want Newcastle United to go out and spend, you know, ridiculous sums of money on players that aren't good enough, but, you know, signing a share for £3 million, I think after, we got them. Did we get him before the World Cup, or was it after?
After
we got him after the World Cup. So particularly since he played in a successful Switzerland team during the World Cup and impressed, it's a brilliant bit of business. But, you know, I agree with you, Norman, it depends on the opposition, because I've seen Cher have stinkers this season. I've seen him, he was terrible against West Ham at home, absolutely shocking. So the more he plays, the better he'll get. He's not the finished article, and the fact that he adds a goal threat is brilliant, because we're a side that doesn't score from midfield, essentially. He's not Franz Beckenbauer yet, or Hatem Ben Sharfer, as a patron tweeted yesterday. he's doing really well at the minute, and like you say, that Lejeune and Cher, I mean, there was a couple of ropey moments where balls were played across the back, but I felt that Cardiff didn't, and because they hadn't been correctly prepared, like you say, Norman, they didn't know how to deal with two ball-playing centre-backs. They didn't know when to press, they didn't know when to drop, they didn't know when to press as a team, they didn't know when to see possession and force them to play long, they didn't know, like, whether to let Cher run 30 yards. There was clearly no one in the Cardiff team that had been told, if one of these lads brings out of defence, you know, the holding midfielders, you lads have to come and get him. There was just nothing, and you're not going to get that every game, is my point. Against Man City next week, you know, Pep Guardiola will have a plan, and would have had a plan even if Cher hadn't scored that goal, for when Cher steps out of the ball in defence. So we were lucky to an extent, I think, that Cardiff were managed by who they managed. Well, I'll come to you nonetheless then, Chris. Longstaff and Hayden completely controlled that midfield yesterday. One is a fifth choice child, and the other is a player who most fans don't want to see in the team, and he doesn't want to be in the team either. He wants to be playing his football somewhere else. But how impressed were you with their performances, and Longstaff in particular? Do you think he has a future at this highest level?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I was impressed by both of them. Longstaff's 21, Hayden's 23. I know that Hayden's been with us a few years now, but both are incredibly hardworking, and I thought they put in a real shift. I thought just kind of particularly focusing on Longstaff, I think this was his third game, wasn't it? His first win, he was brilliant. I was particularly impressed. I saw a stat that he won 4 aerial balls. Now, he is a tall guy, but he's pretty slight. So I think that was kind of particularly impressive. And I just think the kind of the ice in his veins and the confidence that he exudes. I know that he had that shot over the bar when he was kind of urged to shoot by the crowd, which, okay, maybe wasn't the smartest choice at the time, but I think just really kind of epitomises the confidence that he's got. I think he's incredibly exciting, and I know that we've kind of been excited by him for a time since he's been playing in the under-23s. But I've had a look around this morning, and there's the rest of the Premier League and the rest of the footballing media is starting to kind of wake up to Sean Longstaff, which is kind of quite impressive. I thought he was really excellent. Hayden was solid enough. We all know that, as you say, he wants away. If we can get a replacement in, and that is a big if, then yeah, by all means, move him on. But I think in terms of his professionalism, over the last kind of few months, you know, he since Cardiff away, which was very poor, he's really kind of turned it around. I've been really impressed by that application when called upon. Shout out to them both.
And do you think is it still the case that as soon as Shelvey and Diomi come back in, no, they supplant Longstaff?
I don't think it's a foregone conclusion. He's worth a run? Obviously Rafa watches them in training day in, day out, and will know better than we do. But I think the performances that Longstaff in particular has kind of put in over the last kind of few weeks have, you know, meant that he is not, it's not a foregone conclusion that Diama and Shelvey will be dropped. I'd be happy enough to see him kind of play in future lineups over the next kind of 4 or 5 games, and we have got tricky games coming up. In terms of kind of he's really kind of showed himself to be a model young professional, and one with kind of some really decent talent as well.
I mean, Norman, you were very impressed at the match by Longstaff, but also Christian Atsu as well. He's a player I've not really seen kind of praise that much in the aftermath on social media. So, thoughts on Atsu yesterday, and why you were so impressed with his performance?
Atsu, he's a player who I think gets a lot of unfair stick when he plays and things don't come off. But you've always got to, basically every player at Newcastle, you have to put it into context. Atsu was a £6.5 million buy from Chelsea, where he didn't get a game. Went on loan Everton, didn't get a game. I think he was on loan Bournemouth, didn't really get a game. And he's expected to come into a Newcastle side, but should be parachuted in when there are injuries, and all of a sudden hit the ground running. And it's really difficult to do, especially when you're not necessarily an excellent Premier League footballer. But yesterday, what we saw was what damage he can do with the opposition. Now, Cardiff was so rigid, so incredibly tightly rigid, and obviously Warnock has zero in-game management, and it's like Warnock's watching the game, seeing what's happening, but not actually taking in what's happening. So Cardiff City are the kind of side who need to man-mark. They need to be able to man-mark in opposition. Now, with Christian Atsu, when he's given the role that he is yesterday in as a kind of attacking midfielder in front of Hayden and Longstaff, behind Perez and Rondon, just able to work left to right, Cardiff City, they couldn't track him. It was almost like there was no one on him yesterday, and he just caused so much panic and so much damage that it obviously just opened up space to the rest of the pitch, which Yedlin, Perez, Rondon, Richie all exploited. And I think a lot of that was down to the fact that Atsu's running was just incredibly confusing for Cardiff players who had no idea how to cope with them. Really good performance. And Atsu, West Ham away last season, Stoke City away yesterday, games that we had to win, vital games, and Atsu's come in and put in a shift in all of those games. So just fair play to him. Basically a limited footballer in many ways, but one who I think when he gets it right can be really, really useful.
Chris?
Yeah, just to say on Atsu, Norman said that, you know, he's a big game, a big important game player. You know, he might not be the most talented in the world, but he can turn on. And I believe a few years back at the African Cup of Nations, he was player of the tournament. And I think we're seeing that kind of, you know, that application when it matters now for Newcastle. So, yeah, he's had a bit of a checkered career with us, but I think he does offer the side something.
Yeah, and Rob, just, I know this wasn't on the running order to throw you a curveball, but, you know, another player who's picked up widespread acclaim is Ayoze Perez. Obviously, he grabbed his goal, and it was a really good goal as well from the back of the Gallagher where we are. You kind of, you know, you're looking and you just think Rondon's hammered that across the box, and then Perez has almost been there at the back post to tap it in. But his movement to get in front of the defender, I mean, it's terrible defending, I can't lie, but his movement to get in front of the defender is really good and really positive. There's a little bit of a, much like last season, there's a little bit of a renaissance of his, you know, his, or how people view him, basically. Do you think that's fair? Do you think he has improved a lot in recent weeks, or is this the kind of performance he's put in all season but maybe hasn't been appreciated as much? Which one is it?
Perez is the type of player who just goes through hot and cold patches, and luckily at the minute it's a bit of a hot patch for him. He's I mean, he's a good forward player. He comes in for an awful lot of criticism from our fans, or a certain section of our fans, hence his fingers in the ears celebration that he seems to have adopted recently. Interestingly, actually, when I was watching the highlights, when he celebrated with the fingers in the ears, there was a guy in the Leasers end, sort of obviously like jumping up and down and applauding. And then as soon as Perez turned towards the fans and did the fingers in the ears, this lad in the crowd just went like mental at him and just started shouting at him, like saying, "Oh, F off," kind of thing. Like, it's really, really, really pissed him off. So I don't know whether maybe he needs to pack in that celebration, like maybe winding people up. I don't even know. Is it targeted at the media or the fans? I don't know. Maybe both. But anyway, I don't think it's going down too well anymore. Once was probably enough. But no, I think he did take his goal well. He probably was helped a little bit by the fact that obviously Cardiff were probably pushing. I mean, despite the fact that it was added time, you know, they were pushing forward. They brought on an attacker for a defender, I think, and he just got himself. But his movement was great in the box. He got himself in front of his defender, anticipated the ball coming in from Rondon, who was superb. I'm sure we'll speak about him. Yeah, it was good awareness, and pleased to see him scoring. Obviously against Blackburn, he took his goal well, and he works tirelessly for the team, which I'm sure will be massively appreciated by Rafa Benitez, who loves players who know what they're doing defensively, and Perez is certainly one of those players.
Just quickly on Perez again, it's, you know, I think we've all said this regularly. In context, 1.5 million from the Spanish second division. He's got 4 goals now. There's at least 15 games to play this season. Let's see if he plays in all of those games, which is highly likely if he doesn't get injured. I can see him getting another 6 goals. That'll be 3 consecutive seasons that Ayoze Perez has got double figures. Now, that's a real achievement for a player, as I say, who cost 1.5 million from a second Spanish second division side. So for all of the criticism that he gets, I think, pound for pound, he's been an absolutely incredible buy, and he plays a very important role in the side. And yesterday we saw the best of Ayoze Perez arriving in the box, timing his run well, getting the goal, but also just his off the ball movement, using his lower body strength to kind of turn and set up chances for other players. I'm a fan. I'm a big fan of Perez, as I say, in the context of what he is as a footballer and where we got him from. He's been brilliant. I think he's on 38 goals for Newcastle now. He could have 50 goals for Newcastle by the end of next season. It's not bad, is it?
Well done, Alan Pardew. Never forget. A Pardew signing.
Was he a Pardew signing or a Graham Carr spot?
No, Pardew. Pardew made it abundantly clear that it was his signing when things were going well. Pardew was probably in Tenerife on holiday. We can only speculate about why and what he was doing, yep. But we'll not. And then he probably got speaking to some... speaking to some locals who recommended him, and because it appeared on the company credit card, Derek Lambias from the time would have been like, "What the fuck? Why have you been to Tenerife?" And he's plucked out the top scorer or something, or player of the year, and here we are, Jose Perez down the line. takeover stuff to touch on really quickly, or non-takeover, however you want to look at it. I just want to make a comment on just how the supports kind of perceive Mike Ashley to an extent. You see loads of "we've been fooled again," fans let themselves be fooled, journalists let themselves be fooled. Craig Hope came out with a story yesterday saying Mike Ashley was had come to the conclusion the takeover was off, that's why he's come back to games. You know, you've since seen stories in the Chronicle that him and Rafa spoke after the game, they're going to have a training ground meeting, blah blah blah. You have a school of thought which thinks that Mike Ashley is a PR mastermind who creates these diversions to divert fan attention and get people to renew season tickets. Two things. Number one, he's not that smart. And number two, he genuinely doesn't give that much of a fuck. The reason that takeover speculation appears around the same time, or has done in the last 2 years, it's because any prospective person wanting to buy the club, and Peter Kenyon is a real person, and there's Amanda Staveley, they're real people who, in my opinion, want to buy the club. Whether we'll have a willing seller, or whether they have the required funds, I don't know. But they are not Mike Ashley's mates doing Mike Ashley a favour. It's not a Mike Ashley scheme. They appear at the times that they did because the club looks reasonably safe from the threat of relegation. We all know Mike Ashley refuses to put a relegation clause in the sale of the club, which I think would be sold by now if he did. And the reason that Peter Kenyon appeared when he did, in my opinion, it was no coincidence that we'd won three games on the spin and were out of the relegation zone. Same with Amanda Staveley last season. She kind of first appeared, at that Liverpool game, which was right at the end of our very, very good run, when we'd won several games on the spin and were up to fifth or something briefly after beating Crystal Palace. So the time has got nothing to do with Mike Ashley. In addition, this idea that season ticket renewals and transfer windows, Mike Ashley, go back through all the transfer windows under Mike Ashley. The vast majority of them have been terrible, if not all of them. And he hasn't needed the excuse of a takeover not to buy any players in January, or not to invest in the summer, or to make a £22 million profit on player trade in the summer. This idea that he has to orchestrate, or Keith Bishop, who again people give far too much credit to, you know, it's just nonsense. Like that Bishop orchestrates takeover rumours to make sure fans renew their season tickets. Well, the timing doesn't work because the takeover is supposedly off, and it's only the 19th of January, or it was yesterday. So there's 11 days left before both the end of the transfer window and the season ticket cancellation deadline. And finally, can anyone tell me who are these people out there that, you know, rely on, you know, one transfer window to not cancel their season tickets? Like, it just, you know, I don't know anyone who would make that very difficult decision based on one transfer window. Like, if it just, I don't think these people exist. I don't think, whilst the people definitely will be cancelling their direct debits and season ticket, you know, I get that and I understand the reasons why. I don't think a lot of these people will be doing it on the basis of one sign in a transfer window, or because there might be a takeover. Like, Mike Ashley doesn't care enough about you or me to go into this level of detail and hash this plan and include various parts of the media. It's kind of paranoia, and I understand why it's paranoia, because we've got who we've got, we're treated how we're treated. But ultimately, you know, Mike Ashley isn't smart enough to pull off something like that. I think Peter Kenyon is real. I think he wants to buy the club. I have no more information than that. But can he, will he? No idea. Probably not by the looks of it. And that could be for a number of reasons. You have to look at the fact that Mike Ashley's been trying to sell Newcastle United for over 10 years, and he's failed, and this is a guy who's good at selling things, supposedly. That's his forte. He's a salesman. He sells things. His business is to sell things. I think you have to look at his desire to sell the football club. But I certainly don't think that there's been some contact takeover to try and get you to renew your season tickets or to allow the club not to spend in January. No one believes that. It would be the worst plan in the world. You know, that's just a personal opinion. People might disagree. I just wanted to say that. Obviously, the club is fucked long term without a takeover, even if we do stay up this season. But that's you know, something we'll discuss probably more on Payroom Podcasts in the coming couple of weeks. Back to the football, though, lads. After that little negative section of the podcast, got it in there. Norman, Salomon Rondon, Neil Warnock said he was the best player on the pitch, and he also says you get what you pay for. I don't really know what he means by the second comment, but I think we can both agree on the first one.
Warnock yesterday, he came up with that. I mean, that was a spectacular comment. That was a spectacular comment about Rondon being the best player on the pitch, and you get what you pay for, even though he's a loan player and he had a contract release clause of 13 million, which, you know, they've just gone to the French League and bought, I think they've paid like 14, 15 million for a 28-year-old player from League One, which, to all intents and purposes, isn't a particularly good league. That was an interesting comment. Also, his comment about there were 9 Championship players on the pitch yesterday. It was an interesting comment, given that we had, I think, 5 Championship players on the pitch. Longstaff from the youth system, and, you know, a goalkeeper from the reserves of the Czech League. We know the story. A player who couldn't get a game at Deportivo La Coruña, who were relegated from La Liga last season. All of that. So it's just Warnock being Neil Warnock and not giving any credit to the opposition whatsoever, because he's a prick. But I think Rondon's performance yesterday, again, like the Bournemouth game, Watford away, Huddersfield away. Obviously, he scored goals in those games, so, you know, to use the word complete centre-forward's performance is probably more apt in those games, because he actually got goals, which is, I guess, a centre-forward's job. But yesterday, he did everything but score. He was just magnificent. The bit of skill at the end for the Rondon, for the Jose Perez goal, he completely baffled Joe Bennett, who I actually thought was Cardiff's best player yesterday. That's saying something about how bad they were. But you said to me during the game yesterday, I think, Alex, that once he'd worked out that these two Cardiff players were basically going to sit on the edge of the box and they weren't actually going to track him at all, as soon as he worked out what their kind of, you know, inverted commas, game plan was, he just absolutely rinsed them. Hey, physically, you know, the Cardiff centre-halves are huge, but Rondon himself, maybe not as big as their centre-halves, but he's just more powerful, and he's... Not only is he powerful, he's just a very good footballer. And the fact that Newcastle United haven't gone out and bought him for the pathetically small release clause of, what was it, 13 or 16 million?
16,
is absolutely tragic and indicative of how pathetically run the club actually are. Because if Rondon continues in this vein until the end of the season, another club in the Premier League will come along and get him. If Rafa gets a job at another club in the Premier League, he might go and activate that release clause. He was just superb. And I'm really enjoying seeing a centre forward like that at Newcastle. It feels like it's been a long time since we've had that.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I thought that it was a great battle between him and the two Cardiff centre backs. Essentially, you had, they basically tried to push Rondon further and further back towards his own goal, and he very quickly realised that he could turn them quite quickly, and Cardiff had no answer to that. And you saw, particularly as Cardiff were pushing for, an equaliser and then the second goal, Rondon exploited the space time and time again, which is what good centre forwards do. And ultimately, that was a fantastic assist for the third goal. A couple of step overs, some really, really nice football, and a brilliant cross for Perez to get on the end of. All that was missing from his performance was a goal, but we've seen he'll probably get one in the next three games, and he'll probably get a winner knowing him, because he scores big goals for Newcastle. Rob, to bring it over to you, the back five, obviously we all saw the back five before the game, our hearts sank. I think it was Adam that famously said in a podcast a couple of weeks ago, well, he'll definitely not play a back five against Cardiff, and, you know, I agreed with that, but a back five it was. What was the difference, you think, between the tactical setup between the Fulham game, which went so badly wrong, and yesterday, which went so right?
The fact that we had Lejeune back for this game for Fulham we had Cher and Lascelles and Dummett as a three. Clearly Dummett isn't anywhere near as good a ball playing defender as Lejeune. Last season we saw how good Lejeune is with the ball, and, you know, his vision is fantastic, and I think having him back in the three at the back did help massively. I think also Yedlin as well. We didn't have Yedlin for Fulham. He was good. He was very good yesterday, getting up the pitch, giving options on the right wing. That was just another thing for the Cardiff backline to think about, and really stretched them at times. Longstaff was constantly looking for Yedlin, getting up the pitch. I think we played, probably had Manquillo at right wing back or right back against Fulham, which clearly he's got nowhere near the pace that Yedlin's got, so that was just another factor that Cardiff had to deal with, which we didn't have against Fulham. Having that option on the right is just another outlet for our players who were able to play long passes. you know, I seem to think back to so many times when Shelvey's picked out Yedlin with a 50-yard pass over the midfield. And that, you know, you could see Longstaff looking for Yedlin, like I said, like constantly yesterday. And it's pleasing to see that Longstaff's got that confidence to do that, and you know, to look for the fullbacks or the wingbacks getting up the pitch. Also, I think, you know, Fulham carry a much bigger attacking threat than Cardiff do. We saw yesterday how impotent Cardiff were up front. They just had no threat at all, whereas Fulham have got that capability of scoring goals. And I think probably going into the Fulham game, you know, Ranieri coming in, and Ranieri had taken over Andy when we played them, yeah. So I think having a new manager in, would have given them a lift. Rafa would have been thinking about more attacking threats from Fulham, whereas with Cardiff, I'm sure he's probably realised that we can have more freedom to express ourselves in our play and get forward and be more creative and be more likely to score against Cardiff than we were against Fulham. So, and certainly not concede against Cardiff, as we may have done against Fulham. But yeah, I think it was quite a different game overall.
Nice one. And Chris, the relegation picture, how is it looking? I presume you're more confident than yesterday, but are you still confident Newcastle can stay in this league? And why or why not? And is it based on our performance and our fixture list, or is it based on the fact that you think the others are much worse?
Yeah, I think we've given ourselves a fighting chance. I did a bit of a kind of dig through the kind of various upcoming fixtures for relegation rivals, so from Palace down. I think it's fair enough to kind of say that, I mean, Huddersfield at this point are probably gone. I think they've got 11 points. That's quite a tall order. Fulham, a couple of points ahead of them. 14. I don't think they're quite gone yet, but yeah, there is. It's not looking fantastic for them. Both of them have games in hand, but they're against Spurs for Fulham and Man City for Huddersfield. And I'm sure that Norman and I and the other guys will chat about this tomorrow on Prem Patter. So if you're not a patron, make sure you you sign up so you can get access to that. But the other teams around us, obviously Cardiff 2 points below us, albeit with a worse goal difference, so kind of 3 points at this point in time. I think kind of Palace and Southampton are probably gonna sneak out of it, which leaves a kind of 5-team mini league between Burnley, us, Cardiff, Fulham, and Huddersfield. I think probably looking at the upcoming fixtures in terms of hardest kind of you know, next five games, you know, we're definitely up there. Man City and Spurs the next two, pretty tricky by anyone's kind of imagining. But then we have kind of three home games against you know, two relegation rivals and one side that are kind of up and down in Wolves. So I think, you know, those three games, you know, are still crunch games. We need to win them. There's 9 points there for the taking, but yeah, so I think I give us a fighting chance, but you know, it's going to kind of go down to the wire, and this is to echo, you know, a lot of what Rafa said yesterday.
Norman?
I agree with everything you've said there, mate. I also believe that I think I said yesterday before the match, 5 wins between now and the end of the season is feasible. 15 points based on who we've got in home matches. And I genuinely think that, you know, 4 more wins will be enough, because I don't see Huddersfield, Fulham or Cardiff getting above 32 points. I don't think any one of those sides will reach more than 32 points. So you're looking at 34 to 35 points to keep you up. And I think that we're very capable in the big pressure games of getting those victories. I mean, even when you look back at Rafa's first season at the club, when he came in the Premier League with 10 games to go, when the pressure was really on and we had to get results, we kind of did. Swansea at home, Palace at home, massive, massive games, and we got the victories. Obviously, we know how it worked out down at Villa. That was a bad day, but I'm talking about the home matches that we need to win, and I think we'll get them. I think we'll get the points on Burnley. I think we'll get the points on Palace. I think we'll get the points on Huddersfield and possibly Southampton, because I think Southampton are going to be safe by that point anyways. So I'm after yesterday's victory, I'm so much more confident that we'll avoid relegation. And that's indicative of the belief I've got in Rafa to get the results, but also the fact that I just think after seeing Cardiff yesterday and seeing Huddersfield away, they're just bad sides, and Fulham are managed by Ranieri, so I think we're going to be all right.
Yeah, I mean, it is, of course, kind of right and understandable that we focus on the games against kind of rivals, so Wolves, Huddersfield, Burnley, as well as the Southampton match that you mentioned. But I think it can't kind of go without saying the importance of a good, strong defensive performance in the two games prior to that, so against City and Spurs. Obviously, that goal difference cushion that we have now, inside that kind of bottom seven, we have the second best goal difference there. It's really important that we preserve that slender advantage that we have over the kind of sides below us. You know, we've talked for the last couple of seasons about how important goal difference can be at the end of the 38 games, and I think that, you know, that will kind of be telling, you know, this season, and I think also that kind of psychological advantage as well is key. So we've talked a lot about kind of five at the back in recent weeks, but yeah, that defensive record needs to be continued. We need solid defensive performances against City and Spurs.
I think it's important that as a support, and I know Rafa and the players won't do this, that with the three away games that we've now got coming up, we don't panic. There's no, you know, if we were to lose all three, which is, you know, I mean, if you were to go on bookmakers' odds, you know, they would suggest that we will lose all three games. I think we're more than capable. Sorry, they're not all away. Man City's at home, but the three tough games we've got before a massive 5 days for our season with Huddersfield and Burnley on a Saturday and a Wednesday at St James's. With these three games, it's important that, I mean, the chances are we will be in the bottom three, because Cardiff just need to pick up, you know, one win in that time, and they might not, but, you know, we'll see. It's that we'll remain calm and remain focused, and that I think we will get at least a point from those three games, if not all three. I think Wolves away is definitely a game that Rafa will be looking at, considering Wolves' patchy home form and their leaky defence despite their attacking prowess. And, you know, why can't we go to Man City and do something? Why can't we go to Spurs and do something? Wolves won at Spurs recently. But we have to remain calm and we have to remain focused as a support behind the manager and the players. I thought St James's Park was really positive yesterday. I thought, whoever said that might be new Norman, that Ashley being there kind of helped focus everybody a bit. And I thought the noise was good, the support was good. Obviously, we were winning for much of the game, which is we've hardly been ahead at St James's Park this season. Dreadful home record that we've got. If we could be the same against Manchester City, but particularly against Huddersfield, like what wasn't apparent yesterday was a nervousness. It was really good that there was no nervousness from the kickoff yesterday. Everyone in the crowd, everyone in the crowd, all of the players knew there was a job to do yesterday, and it was achieved with kind of the minimum of fuss, the maximum professionalism, and we have a role to play in that. And I thought the fans were fantastic yesterday, because we've criticised them enough on this podcast over the years. Norman, was that a dog paw you raised?
Yeah, it's not to make a comment. It's just basically dog sticking a paw for a belly rub. So I don't know. Have you got anything to say, Lil? You got anything to say about yesterday? What was your take on it? Nah, she's not bothered.
Right. Well, unless there's anything else you think we've missed, lads, now is the chance to say, Norman.
I do have a comment, and I forgot to drop it in. The BBC match report was absolutely hilarious, saying that Rondon basically had a field day because Sean Morrison wasn't available. Really? Sean Morrison was the difference yesterday. Sean Morrison, a championship clogger at best, would have kept Rondon quiet.
Fake
I mean,
news.
Please. Please.
It's also Rondon didn't score. And wasn't involved in the first two goals, even though he had an excellent game. Right, thanks for listening to the True Faith podcast. As I say, we'll have loads of podcasts for you this week, so keep checking every single day. Please come and join us on Patreon. We'd love to have you on board. You know, there's nearly 300 people doing it at the minute. And also check out our YouTube channel. We're starting to upload a lot more content to that about all things Newcastle United. Many thanks to Rob, Norman and Chris for joining me today. This has been the True Faith podcast. We'll be back for you with another podcast like this after the very appealing cup tie against Watford next weekend. So thank you. Bye-bye.